This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Bigger Picture. It's our Health News Digest segment. I'm Tina Camellia, and joining me this week is Lee Chui Lin, lending us her thoughts on all things pop culture and science communication, because our topic today is about celebrity scientists. I want to know your thoughts on Bill Nye and how he's getting some flack for his new show, even from scientists themselves.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me back into the studio, for not barricading the doors. I think that Bill Nye, do you have fond memories of him? Because I do.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, right? Like we grew up with
Bill
him.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
And then after that, I think this show has come on the back of him kind of promoting climate change. I mean, he's been a huge climate change activist. He was at the Women's March. He's been at basically any march you can think of, you know, waving the climate change banner, which is great. But then I think that that is the pop culture or the cultural capital that he then spent on Bill Nye Saves the World, which is the show that we're talking about, right? He wouldn't have had that show based on Bill Nye the Science Guy, I don't think. I don't think anybody was thinking, you know who we need to talk about climate change, it's Bill Nye. But he kind of claimed that role, and now he has enough of a claim on it, he feels, to do this show. I think that there are some areas which were probably deeply misguided. Have you watched it?
I tried, but I couldn't last the full episode. A lot of the things that he discussed on the show are stuff that I already know. Like, I'm with you, bro. You don't need to.
Yeah. I think part of it is a confusion over who he's speaking to.
And he brings in celebrities. I get the idea that he wants to tap into their fan base, right? So he brought in Steve Aoki, Will Wheaton, and all these kind of people, but leaving all this heavyweight science stuff to himself. Because these guys have no scientific background at all.
Well, therein lies the problem, because Bill Nye, I feel, only got the show, this is what I'm saying, on the power of celebrity, not on the power of science. He's no, I know Neil deGrasse Tyson has his detractors, but he's a serious scientist. You know, he's done things. He's not an engineer talking
Bill
about
Nye
climate
is.
Change. Yeah. Bill Nye is a mechanical engineer. I'm not saying that he didn't have to go through education and training in order to obtain that title, but that doesn't change the fact that maybe he shouldn't necessarily be doing the show. He might be a more natural fit on, say, Mythbusters. Mm-hmm. And I think that that sort of show, with its lighter take on science and physics, I mean, it does run through those things, right? Let's look at Mythbusters. It was a roaring success until it wasn't. And it was so successful in no small part because it didn't really require serious science. I mean, it incorporated things. You learn to understand building mechanical things, doing things with your own hands, fundamental principles of engineering in some cases, physics in others, biology even sometimes. But none of it was weighed down with any one of them going, hi, I am the scientist now, and I am going to tell you all the things, and I'm going to tell you why, if you don't believe me, if you don't stand with me, you are wrong. Whereas Bill Nye, aside from leaving the serious science burden to himself, is also taking on that role of patriarchal scientist, I suppose, you know, of I will tell you how things are, and you will listen.
Yeah, I mean, how patronizing it is to name your show Bill Nye Saves the World.
It's clickbait, right? I mean,
are you saving the world, though?
I don't want to defend him. I think the show is misguided. I've said as much. But I do think that he is trying to navigate a space that he thinks he's familiar with because he's been on television. But this is the streaming age. It's on Netflix. People's viewing habits are different. People have the internet. In the 90s, if Bill Nye says something, it's kind of gospel. You know, mm-hmm. if not, I have to go ask my science teacher about it or look it up in an encyclopedia or hopefully ask my parents. But other than that, I wouldn't really have the avenue to say, seriously? But now, like you say, the reason why he's saying things that you already know is in part because you're interested in science. You're a person who lives on the internet. But it's also because you have access to the internet. you have had this sort of exposure to the things that he's speaking of. Whereas before, he could, maybe he was always patronizing and we just didn't know. I don't know.
But I don't see why he has to do this show, though. Because, I mean, a very recent example is Cosmos, or the reboot of Cosmos that Neil deGrasse Tyson did.
This is the Cosmos, a network of 100 billion galaxies. Come with me. Our journey is just beginning.
Cosmos, a space-time odyssey.
It was visually stunning, but in terms of viewership, I don't think that the ratings reflected. I mean, it was like maybe 1% of American households tuning in compared to things like The Big Bang Theory, tenfolds.
But there is an immediacy to climate change that there isn't with the Cosmos, isn't it? I mean, Cosmos is quite a niche interest in some ways. I mean, people who are generally interested in the world, generally curious about science, might tune into that. But for the most part, climate change is something that's in the news. You could even just have a passing topical interest in it and think, oh, interesting, somebody's doing a documentary on it, someone's doing a show on it. Inconvenient Truth? I'll watch that. You know, so there is a pressing immediacy to it. And I guess there are two answers. I mean, I'm not Bill Nye, but from where I sit, I suppose there are two possible answers to that question. One is that it's a cynical fame grab. You know, he's become known for something that he wasn't known for before. He has that kind of nostalgic reach with an audience that are now the people who are supposed to be able to forge change. People who were preteens in their 90s or who were 10 or whatever are now the people who are marching, are now the people who presumably would want to watch this show. So there is that. On the other hand, maybe he just genuinely felt strongly about it and has been ill-advised and the production value of it is poor. And because I think that there are many, many ways to do an interesting show, including dragging in or bringing in actual scientists. I don't think there's a shortage of interesting science on the internet. But he seems to have gone, no, let's just bring in famous people to appeal to these people who are only interested in celebrity culture.
Right.
I think that's the reason why you use the word patronizing, because it is. Because it's like, well, here's a science show, but I don't think I can hold your interest unless here's a comedian, here's a model, here's whatever.
Yeah. I mean, he got Tyler, the Creator, to do his theme song for this new show. I like Tyler, the Creator.
Yeah, I love Rachel Bloom, who did a segment that's been widely derided, a segment on, I think, gender and sex. She did a song on it. And she herself, her work tends to deal very frankly with issues of the body and feminism and in a very, very funny, very, very smart, sharp way. And what she did for Bill Nye is just terrible. It's crap. I think that's the fundamental problem with the show. It's crap. And then that then drags the issue of science communication into question. Like, how should we be doing it if somebody who was Bill Nye, the science guy, can't quite manage to capture it? And I think that's the question.
Do you think that he has lost his appeal? Because in the 90s, I liked him.
Me
now,
too.
He should just be keeping quiet. Is that fair for me to think that way of him?
Why do you feel he should be keeping quiet?
I'm starting to agree with people whom I used to disagree with. I'm not trying to say that being an engineer does not qualify you to talk about science. I think everyone should be able to talk about science, regardless of whether you have a scientific background. But he wants to have the fame to himself rather than giving the opportunity to other people, real science experts in different fields who are doing actual research recently. For example, like, when was the last time you did something sciencey?
Therein lies the fame versus information or education problem. I think if you really wanted to put together a well-thought-out, interesting science show, you could do that. We could do that. It could be done on radio. It could be done with a bit of effort, with a bit of thought. But what's happening here is someone's kind of mashed together, well, we have a guy who's kind of known for science, and hopefully the audience doesn't question too much. But he speaks only to one side of any given dichotomy, you know? And I think that the purpose of science education is not to speak to people who are already interested in science, especially if it's about climate change, which has its fair share of deniers. I mean, you don't then just get someone on to talk about how stupid climate change deniers are. That is not a way to reach to anybody. You don't reach over and say, hey, you're stupid, and let me tell you why. And at the end of it, you're supposed to, you know, hug my feet and tell me, oh, thank you. Thank you for showing me the light. I think Bill Nye has a skewed expectation. Either that or there seems to be no thought about who this is for.
Yeah, it's a bit self-indulgent, I think.
It's very self-indulgent. And it comes at a time when everybody's really, when a lot of science communicators are trying to push out of Twitter, out of YouTube, Instagram, to say like, hi, we're here, listen to us. You know, in a day and age where science is quite creepily, quite scarily mistrusted, often misquoted, misused, I think you have scientists now trying to step out of that research mold to say, okay, I understand that you might not understand what I do, so here I am to tell you what I do. Mm. And I think what you're getting at is that he could be giving these people an avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not. He wants it to himself.
I think it's just very poorly thought out.
Okay, there's more to discuss when we come back, but in the meantime, here's a simple task. Can you name living scientists? As many as you can, without Googling. This is Health News Digest, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. It's Health News Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camellia. Also with me is Lee Chui Lin. We're talking about celebrity scientists in the age of great public distrust for science. Scientists have a huge task of myth-busting and debunking anti-scientific claims in an alternative fact era. Are they preaching to the proverbial choir? And also, when I brought up the Big Bang Theory earlier, you kind of rolled your eyes a little bit. Because, I mean, yeah, it's a sitcom. It's not an actual science show. I mean, the science that they speak of on the show are legitimate science, but that's not the focus of the show. It's kind of just
the base,
yeah. But those shows are actually a lot less provocative in terms of dealing with people who are not with the science, so to speak.
Do you think that's what you need from a science show, to be less provocative?
I feel so, because it's so polarizing now, isn't it? When it comes to issues like vaccination, GMO, climate change, people have already made up their minds. And it's so difficult to even start a conversation, because as soon as they know where you stand, and if it's not on the same side, they tune you out completely.
So I would say that Big Bang Theory is not starting a conversation. Big Bang Theory is ambient noise. Because it kind of, as you pointed out, the science just kind of washes around in the background. You know, once in a while they're doing research, once in a while they talk about what they do. But are you hoping then that someone watches that show and is inspired to go and look something up on their own? Or, you know, is that how it would work for you in an ideal setting?
Yeah. Introducing terms, you know, how they speak of, let's say, the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon, for example, just saying that as part of their dialogue, and someone would be thinking, what is that? I'm going to go Google it. And just introducing concepts, scientific concepts, but not indulging in it in the show. The hope I have is that people will be interested to learn more about that.
See, I agree and disagree. I think that there is a way for science communication to be done really effectively. I just don't think it should be done by a preacher.
Mm.
I read a really great article earlier about what shows like Bill Nye's and what science communicators as a whole can learn from religious groups. And, you know, these are two groups that have traditionally been in opposition with one another.
Mm.
But the point that they were making is that sometimes the way that science communicators go about things ends up being very close in nature to the kinds of things that they deride. It turns into, well, if you don't believe this, you're wrong. Mm. And that's it. And I'm not even going to tell you why you're wrong. Go Google it. You know, that's a very common refrain now.
Yeah.
Just Google it. there has to be a way of not policing people's thoughts. I think that has been a failing with religious groups, religious teachings as well. That's why you get people rebelling against it, because why can't I ask questions? So I think the avenue needs to be set open for questions to be asked and answered by actual scientists who are doing interesting work, and presented by somebody who views himself as a science entertainer, which is maybe what Bill Nye should think of himself as opposed to a science educator. He's a science entertainer, and he really shouldn't be handling the hard science.
And you were talking about science and religion, which made me think of Mayim Bialik, a star of The Big Bang Theory, also a neuroscientist. Right now, I think very recently, she just started a Facebook page, Grok Nation. She's active on YouTube. She's got quite a bit of following, and she is a practicing Jewish.
So Orthodox, she, I think.
Yeah. I think she had a clip on science and religion and how she reconciles what she said most people think are contradicting ideas. And I think that that's a nice way of speaking off that kind of topics.
I agree. I also think there's a lot to be learned from other avenues that have successfully communicated to, at the risk of sounding incredibly old, young people. You know, most of the people who are engaging with the young or with teenagers online are doing it by asking them to ask questions. You don't just stand there and start yelling at people about, this is what I believe, and it's not even a belief, this is what is true. That just gets you nowhere. That's what they can get at home. That's what, you know, maybe 80% of parents, hopefully less, but that's what they're doing. So if you look at Bill Nye is American, if you take American examples, you have Amy Poehler's Smart Girls series, you have Tavi Gevinson's Ask a Parent or Ask a Dad series, and it all functions on the premise that there is a communication that is asked for, that is sought after, and upon which the whole show is based. Who asked Bill Nye to do this show? We don't know, right? I mean, it could just be a naked money grab. Who asked Bill Nye to do this show? Possibly nobody. But if you do things based on what people are asking you, you recognize their desires, and then you know who you're talking to. Now he's just kind of out there, and who knows? And I think that's probably why it's failed.
Do we have Malaysian examples?
Of Bill Nye, the science guy?
Yeah.
Do we?
The closest I can think of is Dr. George Lee.
Hello, I'm Dr. George. Do I consider myself a celebrity doctor? Of course I do. Well, I guess celebrity is just a well-known doctor, so I am a celebrity doctor. I guess if you do a lot of public awareness, ensuring that your health messages actually come across, and then if that put you in this well-recognized status, then I guess that is the so-called celebrity doctor.
This is where he's different and probably doing it more correctly than Bill Nye said. His field of expertise is urology, but every week he's not always talking about urological issues.
There's a limited amount of times you can talk about UTIs, I think.
Exactly. But he's always pairing up with the actual expert of that topic. So he could be talking about heart attacks and have a cardiologist with him. So I think that that's the right approach. I mean, he tackles it from a medical perspective and asks the medical-related questions, and then you have the host, say, Mira, asking the more layperson questions like, so am I at risk of heart attacks? You know, I think that that kind of approach is a lot. I mean, I might be biased when I say this because I produce the show, but I think that that's the right way of doing it.
I think that is one right way of doing it. I don't disagree that that's an enjoyable show to listen to, and it's backed up by expert knowledge. But I also think, again, that show opens itself up to people to communicate, and to, it's like a living, breathing thing, and it's informed by the things that are around it, and in this case, the people who are listening, the people who are tweeting, texting, calling. You can't exist in a vacuum anymore in the Netflix age or in the YouTube age or in the Instagram age, which is the age we live in. You cannot do that. You cannot just put something out there and say, this is what I want to do. Now, nobody tell me any otherwise, especially not my audience. But if scientists themselves are saying, this is, what's the point? You need to ask yourself that rather than just say, yeah, season two is coming, which it is. You know. But who knows? Maybe we'll see a significant difference in season two. I'm not super hopeful, but I would like to see that because he is still an influential person.
Lynn, you were yourself in a similar position when you were hosting the Health and Living segment for several years as one of the voices for the Health and Living show. Do you feel that responsibility to communicate scientifically sound information to an audience that may or may not have that kind of scientific literacy?
You know, my big concern with doing that in the past, my hugest priority was always serving as an effective conduit for people to talk to the show. So I wasn't thinking so much about how is this going to be communicated. Is what you're saying true? I guess. Of course I cared about it, don't get me wrong. You know, I wouldn't have been happy having a guest coming and saying, yeah, Earth is flat. Heart doesn't pump, actually, it just jumps. You know, it's like, that would not have worked. But I view the role of the expert as, I'm here to try and get you to communicate truth as far as possible, but I myself am not the communicator of that, you know, because it's not my knowledge. I have the research. That research is as correct as it can possibly be. But then after that, it's the role of the expert, which is where the Bill Nye hole is, right? There is no expert. And I think the other hole is, where's the person saying, guys, what do you want to know? What do you want to ask? You know, the whole purpose of this is we're opening up channels of conversation. Those channels were completely missing.
Mm. Do you think that you have to add in the element of entertainment, the celebrity element of celebrity scientists, to, because,
you know,
that's a common misperception about science, is that it's dry, it's not engaging, it's not entertaining.
The scientists that I follow on social media tend to be people like me, so not really celebrities. Like, you mentioned Mayim Bialik, and I did not really take an interest in what she was doing. Not because she's not interesting, but I don't know, no particular reason. But the people that I find myself relating to are either people who are just geeks or nerds like me, you know, where I might not have the same interest that they do, but I understand the kind of passion that leads you to dig deep into that interest, to do deep dives. And I relate to that. And I'm like, thank you for sharing. You know, thank you for sharing what you know. That's so cool. Or they are the Nat Geos of the world. NASA. These are people. If you have Instagram and you're not following NASA, I think that you're doing yourself a disservice, frankly. I mean, it's amazing.
I don't have Instagram anymore. But when I used to have Instagram, I wasn't following them.
They're great. I mean, they really take you into their research, they take you into the work that they're doing. You get to look at planets, you get to look at the imaging that they're working on, how they're planning to send, an investigation up into the sun and the work that they're doing now to prepare for that. It's great.
Hmm.
Yeah. See? You see?
I'm missing out on...
Also museums.
Yeah.
Museums are a fantastic resource.
Hey, do you guys follow any celebrity scientists on social media? Let us know. Tag them and tweet us on Twitter if you do. We are at BFM Radio. And so who do you follow on Instagram or Facebook?
Well, a favorite of mine that I was telling you about earlier and that I'm not sure other people are following, Dr. Lindsay Fitzharris. She's on Instagram. And she's a medical historian. So you get this really cool insight into, you know, the days before penicillin, wax models, how people used to inject wax into bodies in order to preserve them for people who, back in the days when autopsies weren't common and you needed to learn anatomy. This was one way of going about it. Plastic surgery in World War I, you know, a syphilitic nose dropping off and being replaced by a middle finger. It might not be of interest to everybody, but I recognize the kind of nerdy love that goes into keeping up a feed like that.
Mm.
I enjoy her. Dr. Lindsay Fitzharris.
Do you follow Dr. George Lee on Instagram?
I do.
How is his Instagram feed compared to?
His Instagram is more entertaining and personal, I would say.
I understand that he's posting a lot of like his gym selfies and keeping up with his fitness and so on.
It's fitness and food, actually. You should ask him about this. Because it's all fitness and then all food. He goes through these periods and it's all holidays. I'm curious. I don't know what his strategy is. I don't know if he has one.
Actually, I don't have Facebook, not anymore, because my Facebook always get hacked. And then, I have Instagram. And I guess one of the reasons why I have Instagram is that I want to keep a diary of what my life is, like the exercise regimes that I do, and then at the same time, you know, what sort of things I eat. I mean, for two reasons. Number one is that it gives me a reflection of whether what I'm doing is healthy or not. On the other hand, I actually look at myself in the other side of the fence and see if a person viewing my post, and then will they feel like, ah, oh, this guy is just like, you know, complete super health freak or not. I consider myself kind of live a normal life. I eat a lot, but yet in recent years, I started exercising a lot more. And then so I'm hoping, I mean, I don't particularly want to say that it gives inspiration or anything like that. I'm hoping people will consider if, you know, the fat George Lee can do it, you know, anybody can do it.
Okay.
Have we outed Dr. George as having an Instagram? Has he talked about
it? Yes, he spoke about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's at Dr. George Lee.
Enjoy the Dr. George Lee on display.
And also on Instagram or on social media in general, a lot of celebrity fitness instructors.
Yeah, a lot.
Your thoughts?
Conflicting thoughts. Mm-hmm. I think you have your bikini bodies. I can't pronounce her last name. I should have looked it up before coming in, so I won't try. But Kayla Itzenis? Itzines? Anyway, Bikini Body is a very popular app. You've got a whole ton now, don't you? I mean, I tend to gravitate towards free YouTube videos because I think that if you're doing it that way, I mean, you can have tiers of payment later, but the point is, if most of your work is free on YouTube, I really appreciate that. As in, I genuinely think that that is done with some measure of passion because I'm really not paying you in any way. And I don't think it should be discounted just because it may not be the correct way of working out. Correct, quote unquote. Your form may not be perfect. There are lots of things that I personally think that trainers are a good thing. At least for, say, a month or two when you're really starting to work out. Just someone to tell you, don't lock this, lock this, breathe like this. You know, your back is doing something weird. Things that a mirror can't necessarily tell you. But I don't think it should be discounted, the convenience of being able to roll out of bed and work out in PJs. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think anything that gets people moving more, considering Malaysia and the world's obesity rates as a whole, isn't such a bad thing. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree, but I am very cautious of the people that are putting stuff out there.
The free ones with lots of followers.
Exactly. And sometimes it's just mostly because they're good looking, not because they know their stuff. I'm very upset with a lot of the yoga related Instagram accounts because they're all very mega posture, performance based yoga. Oh, look at me. I can do this. I can do that. Look at my flexibility. Okay, you show off. That's but not what yoga is about.
But this is where your personal discretion and bias comes into it, right? I mean, and I don't mean bias in a bad way. I mean bias in terms of just like you would have to shop around for a trainer in real life, shop around online.
But I'm so bitter about how many Instagram followers they have. They've got millions. And then the legit ones have got like 10 people.
If you're bitter, then that's problematic. And I can't solve that. But I do think that for people who are thinking of working out, I mean, I've been managing to exercise in some form or another every day for the last month. Not long, but I mean, in terms of consistency, that's pretty big for me. So because I can do it at home. And I never anticipated that kind of ease. And I know we've been talking about science communicators, but fitness communicators also play an important role, also are science-backed, but often don't function with it. And I think that there are good ones out there. I would just say, you know, have a poke around. Because it really has its good points, especially if you are self-conscious about working out in a gym. And I think that's a huge stumbling block for people. We've talked about that before as well.
I mean, sometimes it's famous athletes and, you know, they're not trainers, they're athletes, they're footballers, for example. They don't really know how to teach fitness, but if they put a short clip of them working out in the gym, that could inspire people to want to do the same thing. Whether people would know how to do it with the right form is another problem, but just that spark of inspiration, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a spark of inspiration. If you can afford a trainer for a little bit, just so that you get used to your body, you get used to the kind of training that you like, because I think a lot of people don't even know what kind of exercise you like or what kind, what moves you, what motivates you. Do you like, you know, the drop down and give me 10 maggot, you know, type of trainer, or do you prefer a nurturing, let's try kind of trainer? You don't know until you've actually gone about it. But as a shorthand, as a short form for it, online, I think it's one of the ways in which it's made our lives actually significantly better. The web has been responsible for a lot of crap. So I think if there's a way to make yourself feel better, it's free. Why not?
All right. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, Li Chui Lin, a bit of culture panelist full of pop culture knowledge, and for helping us understand a little bit about the celebrity scientist
bubble.
Yeah.
If you missed any part of the show, of course, you can download the podcast version from our BFM app, which is available for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store. Health News Digest will be taking a short break for the rest of the month of July. Instead, we will be playing the edited version of the panel sessions that took place during the Health and Living Life 2017 event in April, where we explored topics about creating urban happiness. Just a refresher, panel one was about the pursuit of happiness. Panel 2 was on mental health in the city. Panel 3 touched on dementia, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and the event closed with a frank conversation about the age of the sex drought. That's what you can look out for every Monday at 4 p.m. throughout the month of July. I'll be back in August with more Health News Digest, bringing you the latest conversations in medicine, nutrition, fitness and more.
That's all we have for this hour on Health News Digest. I'm Tina Camellia, joined by Li Chui Lin. We've been discussing celebrity scientists, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.